to the 100 Guitarist Podcast. My name is Nick Millevoy.
And I am Jason Shadrick.
We are two of the editors of Premier Guitar Magazine, and we are going through the 100 guitarists that we think you should know.
And today we are going to be spending the next 6 hours with you talking about George Benson, one of the all-time greats.
But before we start talking about George, we just want to give a shout-out. Thank you for everybody who's reached out to us. We've been getting like a huge outpouring of support from listeners, from people who dig in what we're doing. Keep it up. You can hit us on email at 100guitarists, that's 100guitarists at premierguitar.com. You can also text or call 319-423-9734 and leave us a voice message. We love texts. We might read them on the show, but if you leave us a voice message, there's a good chance we might play it on the show. So let us know. Tell us what we're doing right. Tell us. Keep an eye on social media, and we'll be posting who we're going to be covering next, and tell us what you think we should know about them and how great or how not great they are. So far, it's all been great, but I think we're looking for some controversy as we go along, right?
Yeah, and today's episode is sponsored by Keeley Electronics. And they sent us the new 4-in-1 series. So here I have the Noble Screamer. I have the Angry Orange. I have the Blues Disorder, which is one of my favorites. And I have the Super Rodent. And these are 4-in-1 pedals, like the Noble here, OD, interpretation of the OD-1, the Noble, and a Tube Screamer type thing. And the 4-in-1 has to do with these switches where you can mix and match here. And yeah, we just did a video with Bollinger that you can see on our YouTube channel, and also with Tom Butwin about them. And they are giving our readers and our watchers a discount. So if you head to robertkeeley.com and enter the code PG10, the number 10, PG10, you will get 10% off your purchase.
So why is the Blues Disorder your favorite one?
I'm a Blues Breaker guy, and the BB here, there's a BB setting up here, and that has been quite pleasurable to my ear. So, and they're sturdy, you know, they're easy to understand, easy to mess around with, don't need to read the manual, you just plug in and go. So, out of these four flavors, which one do you think would be most appropriate in the Millevoy household?
I kind of think the Blues Disorder would probably be mine. That would be the one I want to check out. I've gone through my Tube Screamer phase. I don't need to revisit that.
When I think of blues, I think of Nick Millevoy. That's what I've always said.
Hey, before we talk about Benson, I wanted to ask you, most premier guitar enthusiasts know you as producer Jason on a couple of very popular guitar podcasts. And here you are, you're not just producer Jason, you're still producer Jason, but you're host Jason. How's that?
Yes.
Been? How do you like
that? Oh, it's been great. It was good. It was good back in the day when I was doing Chasing Frets, right, with our buddy Andy Ellis and Joe Gore. But yeah, now it's good to have a big list of guitar players to talk about.
I bet the listeners are glad to have you back.
I'm sure. And also, if you don't like looking at our faces, you can go to Spotify or Apple and
absolutely
just listen to the audio podcast version of this. So wherever podcasts are downloaded, you can find us there. All right, George Benson, Nick.
Yeah, tell me about him.
Oh my gosh, where do we begin? Now, as with a lot of the people that are going to be on this list, their careers are so vast and so big, we can't hit all the high points, but we're going to give you a super solid overview, give you some places to start. We have the playlist in the show notes of our hand-picked, curated tracks that Nick and I have chosen. So we're going to try and get through this in an entertaining but timely manner. So George, he's originally a fellow Pennsylvanian,
yep,
kind of, Nick, right?
Yeah.
So he's originally from Pittsburgh. Was kind of like a child prodigy, mm-hmm, started to record at age 9. Two of those sides that he recorded, She Makes Me Mad and It Should Have Been Me, were actually released when he was a kid. And if you really want to know about George's very early years, you know, teen and preteen, basically, I would highly recommend the Rick Beato interview that that Rick did, and we're going to put a link to that below. He goes
super thorough.
It's super thorough, and George is such a great storyteller when he talks about those early years, like sitting on the stoop playing for people, and you know, and singing and playing.
I love all the stuff. So he says when he was seven, he got started busking, and he'd go out with his guitar and sing on the corner, and started making money. And then that led to him starting to perform, and all that stuff. There's lots of great anecdotes in the Beato interview.
So that, yeah, I would highly recommend all that. So then he really kind of started working on a professional level and became probably known outside of Pittsburgh with when he hooked up with organist Brother Jack McDuff. And there's a great album from 1963 called Brother Jack McDuff Live, which I would highly recommend. And his first debut album was in 1964 on Prestige, and it was the new boss guitar of George Benson. And I have to tell you, it seems like jazz records, maybe even jazz guitar records of that era, just had the best titles. Like, this is my first record. I'm calling it the new boss guitar. I would love to hear if George's story about that. About who was it? His idea? Was it the label's idea? It was one. I put that up there with the incredible jazz guitar of Wes Montgomery.
Yep.
You know.
That's what I was just thinking.
So that album featured that. The next few albums was kind of like basically an expanded organ trio. Dr. Lonnie Smith was on those first couple records. So it was basically like an organ trio with horns. And I really think of Benson's discography kind of in kind of three big sections. Yeah. The one section was the early, real straight ahead stuff, you know, organ based guitar trio.
And what's then great about that stuff, just to interject for a second, is like he could have stopped there. Like he sounds like such a mature voice on the guitar. He was young. But he sounds like such a mature voice on the guitar already at that point. Like, and so many, you know, so many people would have just like stayed right there, but he kept like progressing.
Right. And so the next era was on A&M and Verve, and it focused less on his own compositions and more on like current hits of the day, which was a common thing where it's, oh, this tune is on the charts right now. Let's get you in and record a version of it. You know, a highlight of there was The Other Side of Abbey Road, where he did a bunch of Beatles tunes.
That record, I think, is like, I remember when I first discovered The Other Side of Abbey Road record, and I didn't know that period of George Benson. And what a cool, weird record. If you don't know that record, totally check that one out. There's the arrangements of the tunes are really interesting. They're pretty odd. Some of them are like, not avant-garde odd, just like peculiar. And then, and they're all like, every track but one is like a medley. So it starts with, the first track is Golden Slumbers and You Never Give Me Your Money. The next track is Because and Come Together. Then there's Oh Darling. Then Here Comes the Sun, I Want You, She's So Heavy. And then something, Octopus's Garden, the end. And like the way they deal with the end is really weird on that record. I think my favorite might be the opener, the Golden Slumbers, You Never Give Me Your Money. I think that sort of sold that record for me when I first heard it. I thought that was a bold statement, like the way that they start with Golden Slumbers. And George sounds great singing it.
And there's strings on it, and it's like very, it's like a very big produced sound.
Yeah.
You know, and that kind of was the hallmark of that era where I get the feeling, you know, I wasn't around that time, but I get the feeling like he was well known in jazz circles, but he hadn't really like become a household name.
Yeah.
You know, he was, every album was successful enough to keep the train moving, but he wasn't yet like global superstar. Right. So in 1976, he came out with Breezin' on Warner Brothers, and he had the, and even though he had sung on previous records, this was like, I think, his big, when everybody knew his name, he was singing. And probably the point where George is like, you know, I can probably make a little bit better of a living if I sing a little bit more and still play some guitar solos. You know?
Yeah, because he sings It's like he had sung before, but it was like then those CTI records that come between the Abbey Road record and Breezin, it's like those are, you know, they're instrumental funky guitar stuff, which, by the way, I love that period, the CTI period.
Not one of my favorites, but
no,
no. I like my, I mean, my favorite stuff is it's the early,
yeah,
you know, Boss Guitar and Cookbook. I mean, Cookbook is like, it's, that's one of my all time favorite records ever of anything.
Okay.
The
we'll
cooker,
talk more like, favorite. I want a list of your favorites.
It's coming. Yeah. It's coming. I wrote it down. So Breezin hits. He's a super huge star. He's on Warner Brothers, sticks with Warner Brothers basically through the early 90s for the most part. And then right around that part, around that time, I kind of think of as like his more, from then until now, the early 90s until now, was when I think of more modern. He was on GRP and Concord. And, you know, he had some, I think some of his best albums since then. I think the Tenderly record and the Big Boss Band record with the Count Basie Band were two of my favorites. He did get a little smooth jazzy, you know. He got into that. It was definitely more going for a pop R&B, modern pop R&B type vibe, which I didn't quite connect with that as much. You know, I'm just like, bro, call up an organ player and a drummer and just let's call tunes. Let's just call them out. Let's just play, you know. But the late era albums that I really like are Tenderly, Big Boss Band, like I said, and Guitar Man from 2011, which we did a feature on.
I will say of that later period, that is, you know, that's definitely my weakness in the George Benson discography. But I'm a person who really likes curiosities. I like weird records in somebody's discography. I don't know if this totally falls as that. It's a little modern and like, I don't know if it's quite a curiosity, but in 2019, he released the album Walking to New Orleans. Do you know that one?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And, you know, it starts out, he's playing Nadine. He plays Ain't That a Shame. I think he's got kind of a cool version of Havana Moon. I don't know if I'm being critical, I don't know that I love it. It's a little like, it's a little smooth, like you said, but it's kind of, it's, you know, I liked hearing him play it a couple times. Mm-hmm. But an interesting album for George. He's playing
that
rock
was a good
and roll
one.
Stuff.
Yeah, and he did the Nat King Cole tribute right before that. And Guitar Man, you know, he plays Stevie Wonder tunes, and he plays that Norah Jones tune, Don't Know Why, and Danny Boy, which is incredible. But then he also does like Send in the Clowns and, you know, I Want to Hold Your Hand, Back to the Beatles thing, and Tenderly, he plays Tenderly again. So that to me was like one of his, I hope he just heard all the feedback of people saying, we just want to hear you play more guitar. And he called the album Guitar Man. You
maybe
know?
He'll hear your call for him to get an organ player and a drummer together and just make another trio record.
Right. And then there was the Songs and Stories record, which was, I feel like his, let me call a bunch of my, and a lot of players do this, let me call a bunch of my famous friends
yeah,
and play on it, you know. So like Lee Ritenour was on it and Steve Lukather and they do a bunch of, you know, they do a bunch of covers. They do Show Me the Love and Don't Let Me Be Lonely Tonight and Rainy Night in Georgia, Sailing by Christopher Cross. So that was, to me, that was kind of like a middle of the road album. For that, but I think out of that late era, the three records I would point to, again, Tenderly, Big Boss Band, and Guitar Man would be those three. So now let's get to our voicemails, shall we?
We got some good ones.
We got some good ones. We have a couple celebrities in the house this week. The first one we're going to play is from friend of the podcast, Dr. Molly Miller, who will be spending this summer out on the road playing guitar with Jason Mraz.
And she just put out a trio record, right? She's doing some trio dates with the Mraz band.
That's right. Open in form, yeah. Too. Yes. And Molly, I hit up Molly. I know she's a Benson aficionado, card-carrying Benson fanatic. And she was over in London with Zane. She's playing in his band for a little bit. And, you know, she had some jet lag and thought she'd give us a call and let us know. So here's Molly Miller.
This is Molly Miller. Jet lagged, up in the middle of the night, thinking about the one and only George Benson. Why he's so dang good. He's one of those players that has it all. And sometimes that bothers me when it's like you're so virtuosic, you're so groovy, you have so much vocabulary, you have like the little guitar things. But George Benson, he has my heart. I think one of the things that makes him so good is there is this like musicality to him as well. Where while he's playing so virtuosic, so deeply in the groove, there's just this musicality where he speaks to you. I'm kind of old school. I'd have to say Cookbook, Giblet Gravy, Benson Burner. Yeah, like if you haven't checked him out enough, like go listen to him play a blues. Plays Billy's Balance, The Cooker. There's a bunch of blueses on those records. It's just flawless. And once again, the flawless thing can frustrate me because it's so clean, but there's still a very deep human quality to him. And George Benson, I love you. Thank you for inspiring me. I've transcribed many of your lines, and I will do more. Okay, that's all.
Jason, are you ever bothered by flawless guitar playing?
Sometimes.
I am, often. I like mistakes. But I know what Molly is going for there. Like, yes. George seems to have like perfect technique, right? Like he seems to be, but it's perfect in that, like, I also feel like there's grit and there's dirt in his technique, that his like flawlessness doesn't, for me personally, doesn't bother me at all. I think he's like, the vibe is all there.
And like, to me, when I think of like the flawlessness in his playing, it's, well, one of the videos we're going to put down in the show links is him playing Take Five at Montreux in 86. And it's like, most people would be like, you know, you go to a jam session at Smalls and you're like, hey, let's play Take Five. I don't think that would be viewed upon favorably. You know what I mean? But man, Benson, like you can tell he can go wherever he wants to go, do whatever he wants to do. And it's just, you know, it's flawless in intention. That's what I like about it. It's flawless in intention. And when you actually sit down and transcribe and see what he's doing, it all just makes sense, you know? And like, to me, the grit and stuff comes more from his attack and his, you know, digging in and how he puts blues in everything. But it doesn't sound like I'm going to play the minor pentatonic blues scale over everything.
Yeah.
As has become the bane of some people's existence when they hear, you know, a minor blues over a major chord or something like that, you know. But we should also take a second and talk about Benson's picking technique. Have you ever tried?
not seriously. I've like watched him play and tried to like get my hand like that. And it's so foreign for me. Like the way I hold my hand is so different than the way that Benson holds his right hand that it's like, I've never made music with that technique. Have you?
I've tried. So basically what it is, instead of holding your pick flat, you kind of tilt it up. So your wrist is bent a little bit and the pick is going more almost vertically across the string rather than perpendicular, I guess. Right. I'm describing that right. And when you watch him play, you'll be able to see that it's another, so like the people that I think do that really well, one is going to be our next voicemail guy, Dan Wilson, which we're going to get to in a second. But I had a good buddy of mine, Tom Dempsey, plays like that. And Rodney Jones plays like that. And Tom studied with Rodney. And I think I remember one time Tom telling me, you know, when he was really working it out, I think Rodney told him, he goes, you need to be, if you really want to do that, you need to prepare to suck for like a year. You need to just mentally,
it's so foreign to the way most people play.
But it has to contribute to the bounce and spring in Benson's lines.
I think so.
Like, and strangely enough, there's only been like three or four people I've heard who really nail that sound. Dan is one of them, Dan Wilson. Another guy is Brent Mason.
Whoa, like, interesting. I never
I've seen him. I've done workshops with Brent, and he's played Benson lines because he plays with the thumb pick and fingers. Mm-hmm. So it's not that at all. But it still has that bounce that very fluid bounce to it that it's hard to explain. You hear it,
but it's like because it's like he's swinging even when he's playing like super fast 16th notes, like the dynamic swing.
Yeah. Every note is at a different volume level.
Yeah,
you know, and knowing where to accent those. I think maybe it's even just an accent thing, like. When you get the articulation and accenting down, maybe it almost doesn't matter how you're holding your pick, you know.
Or it does, and that's just part of it, that it's like once you're dialed into that sort of picking technique, that it like gives him more control over his dynamics or something.
And I've never seen, again, anybody out there want to prove me wrong, please. I've never seen anybody hold a pick like that before Benson.
No.
I don't think so.
But that was an untraditional time. It's like, because Benson spent a lot of time like checking out Wes and you know, being a part of, you know, they're in that Beato interview, he talks about like every guitar player of that time and spending time with them. So it's like,
yeah,
he talks about Wes. He talks about, I think he talks about Tal Farlow. It's like anybody from that early jazz guitar period, not early jazz, but like, you know, as electric jazz guitar was like coalescing into its thing. And, you know, you think about any of those guys, like you watch Tal Farlow play, he's got his own technique. And Wes, obviously, I mean, that goes without saying that he's playing with his thumb and doing his weird thing. So it's like, there wasn't like a refined way that like, this is how you hold the pick yet.
Yeah. And even Pat Martino, who.
Yeah. His buddy. You know,
scared the crap out of Benson when he first got to New York, you know, picks in a very different way, but that articulation, that swing is still present. So our next voicemail is a guy, Dan Wilson, Ohio's own, incredible player. I've been listening to him for a long, long time. And he's a real, you know, child of Benson, you could say. Like, even though he's doing his own thing, the Benson influence is strong, you know, from how he picks and how he sounds. And he has that same kind of flawless grease to his playing that is really, really hard to describe and hard to capture.
Yeah, totally.
So let's hear from Dan.
What's up, everybody? This is Dan Wilson. And anytime that I can talk about George Benson, I just jump at the chance. He's a personal hero of mine. I think he's the best that ever touched the instrument. And over the past 10 years or so, I've gotten the privilege to get to know him, and all the like warm feelings that you get from listening to his guitar, you get from his personality. He's capable of this mind-blowing, sheer guitar mastery, to put it like Rodney Jones put it. As a young person, I used to, with my ear close to the speaker, and just try to figure out just how is he doing this? It didn't seem like a human being would be able to reach such levels of technical proficiency and still be able to sing through their instrument. But that's actually what he physically does. He sings through his instrument. All of the complex harmonic ideas, all the incredible, beautiful, beautifully flowing lines, he can sing them away from his instrument. So that kind of gives his playing sort of an organic feeling that's just really all too rare. There are technicians that can wow you and, you know, maybe play just as fast, but the musicality in his phrases and how his phrases sing really set them apart.
There we go.
Yeah, right on. The first time, or the only time I've ever heard Dan Wilson play was I saw him play in Joey DeFrancesco's trio, the great late organist Joey DeFrancesco from Philadelphia, Joey was one of the most virtuosic performances on any instrument that I've like literally ever witnessed. Small club here in the Leslie, like straight, you know, not going through a PA. That was amazing. And within that context, I don't remember who was playing drums, but within that context of like seeing this thing where like all eyes were on Joey the whole time, like Dan managed, Dan found his space, and I was like totally wowed by his playing. And I've been a fan since then. And I think that says a lot, like in that setting, to just like, I didn't go there to hear anybody but Joey DeFrancesco. And then I was like, whoa, that guitar dude's sick.
How many instruments did Joey play that night?
Two.
Trumpet or sax?
Trumpet. Yeah.
So we brought Dan out in his group to the Iowa City Jazz Festival a year or two ago, and he just floored everybody. It was 2 years ago, and he just floored everybody. Like, he was, you know, just got up there and got right to business, and his band was just unbelievable. So if you haven't checked out Dan Wilson, and you've listened to this much so far of a George Benson podcast, then you need to check out Dan Wilson.
Yeah, he's your next go-to
guy. But speaking of George, as we are, Nick, you are in the midst of writing a feature about George. So tell us a bit about the feature, and we're going to play a little excerpt from your interview with George.
Yeah, that's right. I just talked to George a week ago, 2 weeks ago. And, you know, it's interesting what Dan just said about, like, how great George is, like, as a personality. And even though we were just on a phone call, and as you'll hear, we'll play this little clip, we did not have good reception. Even despite that, his personality really shined through. And he was super warm, super engaged, very professional. It was like, we got on that call and he was like, "You're from Philadelphia? I've played there. I've played at the Bijou Theater. I've played on Arch Street." Like, he started just like telling me where he's played in Philadelphia, memories of Philadelphia, how long he's been playing. He's like, "I've been coming there for a long time. Grew up in Pittsburgh, so Philly was one of the first stops." And, just an awesome dude to talk to. And, we just like talked about his career a little bit. And, beforehand, obviously you're the Benson expert, Jason. And I was like, "All right, what am I hitting up Benson about? What should I ask him about?" And you said, "Ask him for Grant Green's story. Ask him about what he's learned from Grant Green." So that was what I asked him, for this podcast, just to know, like, I think, and you and I haven't talked too much about Grant Green before. I know you have a tighter relationship to Grant's music than I do. But I mean, Grant is probably my favorite jazz guitar player. And, the idea of like a connection to Grant, and it's like thinking about George Benson and Grant Green, it's like they were contemporaries. And then sort of like this torch passing sort of thing, I guess, that like Grant was sort of the first person kind of doing the groovy jazz guitar thing, right? Wouldn't you say?
Grant, yeah. I mean, he was like the house guitar player for Blue Note for a number of years. And he what I liked about Grant is that his technique wasn't unapproachable.
Right.
Like, you listen to it and you feel like, you know what? I feel like I can get there. And he had so much blues in his playing.
Yeah.
Like, I think more so than Benson, really. I mean, yeah, Grant was really...
He's kind of a blues guitar player in disguise, really, in my opinion.
You know what? I had a discussion with Dan Wilson, and he told me, "You don't have enough time for that conversation." But no, I mean, Grant, there's some tunes that Grant wrote that have some real changes to it. But,
oh, sure.
But yeah, it's a bit more. There's one video of like the great guitars with Grant Green and Herb Ellis.
Yeah,
and who else?
I know
the
video.
Who else?
I don't know. Is it Barney Kessel?
Yeah, I think it's Barney Kessel. And they're playing like a medium tempo blues, and Grant just chops them up. Like, it is not even just like, man. And the thing is, those guys didn't sound bad. And no. Grant played third. It was like this guy, then Grant. And Grant just is like, well, here we go. And that medium tempo blues was like right where Grant just lived, and he could do that for hours.
So, of course, I had to, it's like, you know, I'm talking to George Benson, total monumental hero figure kind of guy. And, but to me, George Benson is like, you know, his footprint is bigger than just jazz guitar. It's like, there's other stuff to his music that I love, you know, he's a technician, he's all this stuff. But, I wanted to know, like, what I asked him, well, you'll hear me ask him what he learned from Grant Green.
Ooh, melody, simplicity. And the phrasing, man, his phrasing was fantastic. and melodically, he got to the ear simple through his bluesy attitude.
Mm-hmm. I wish we could have played more, but as you can hear, we had a bad connection. But man, phrasing, Grant's phrasing, it is the deepest thing. And you know, George's phrasing, also the deepest thing. So
and he has a new album coming out, George.
Yes. George has a new record coming out. It's an archival release from a couple decades ago. It's called Dreams Do Come True, and he's singing and playing some standards with some orchestration. Cool record. It's not it's more of a vocal record than a guitar record, I would say.
Is it live or studio?
Studio. Gotcha. It's him and Robert Farnan is he did all the arrangements for the record. So it's billed as Dreams Do Come True When George Benson Meets Robert Farnan, featuring the Robert Farnan Orchestra.
All right, now let's get down to it and talk about our favorite tracks.
I looked at yours. We have very different favorite Benson moments.
Yeah, which is probably good because we're covering a lot of ground. So yeah. Mine is from the album in the late 80s, Tenderly. And he does a solo guitar version of the song Tenderly. And it's like, I put that right up there with anything Joe Pass did. Like it's so good. And so just like, even though he probably worked out bits and bobs of it, it just sounds so like in the moment, completely off the top of his head.
Yeah.
And Fluid. It made me wish George, and I don't know, maybe the window has closed, he would just do a solo guitar record. Just sit down and just play tunes, yeah. You know. Sing if you wish, whatever. Sure. But like just play tunes. Just sit there and play tunes. And the other one track that sticks out to me is from George Benson's cookbook, and it's The Cooker, Blues in A Flat. Just ripping great fast. Tune. Here's a head, and let's burn it down.
Mm-hmm.
And it's... that's an all-time. That's when I have guitar students who are like, where should I start with like transcribing George Benson? I'm like, that's a good place to start. Yes, it's fast, but technology can help a bit. And it's real like quintessential Benson vocabulary on that tune.
Yeah, for me, you mentioned earlier, you mentioned him playing Take Five. That the studio version of that is from Bad Benson, which was 1974. I love that version of Take Five. I think he does it's a really cool vibe, and like the rhythm guitar stuff on there is great. The lead playing is like, it's amazing just hearing him shred over Take Five. And you know, you said like you're not showing up to a jam session playing Take Five. Like it seems like such an obvious choice. And another favorite of mine is from is when he does what's that record called, Beyond the Blue Horizon, you know that one? That's
yeah.
A CTI mm-hmm. early CTI release, and he does Miles Davis's So What, which is like another yeah. one you're not showing up to,
but
a jam with session.
But not swung,
no,
it's straight, yeah.
No, and it's his own arrangement of it, and it's so hip. It's just like, I think that it's even hipper that he's choosing these, like in those cases, like these really like obvious jazz hits, like pop jazz. And just like ripping them apart, just amazing. So I like those, but I think you know, a different kind of vibe. In 1977, he released the album In Flight and the song Valdez in the Country. You know that one?
Yep,
dude, mm-hmm. Super groovy, super sick groove. I can't get enough. Every time I hear that, I want to hear it again. And that's like, for me, you know, My first exposure to jazz was really smooth jazz, and just like, I think it's just like a Philly thing.
Whoa.
We've never talked about this.
What are we doing here?
Sorry, I'm dropping a big subject there, but like, you know, I grew up in Philly, and that's like what I was playing in high school jazz band. Like,
I don't even know if that even is a justification. Like,
well,
Pat Martino's from Philly, Joey DeFrancesco's from Philly.
Yeah, but I was growing up.
That's a big jazz town.
Like, I grew up in a place where nobody around me, my parents didn't listen to jazz. They listened to classic rock. Nobody around me listened to jazz. And then I got to middle school and then high school jazz band. And my band teacher, he's a smooth jazz guy. And so like John Blake from the Grover Washington Jr. group would like come and play with the band. He'd play with the jazz band and stuff. And like that to me was jazz. I didn't know So What until like later, after I knew some like Grover Washington stuff. So like I have a skewed idea of this. So Valdez in the Country, it's like that's like this proto smooth jazz thing that really like hits for me. And again, here's another one. My other favorite track, Give Me the Night. His vocals are so good. The tune is amazing. The guitar solo on the way out of that song is unbelievable and fluid. Yeah. And, you know, that's produced by Quincy Jones. Herbie Hancock's playing keyboards. The other guitar player is Lee Ritenour. Like, it's a slamming band. Love Give Me the Night.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, you can check out more these tracks and a bunch more that we picked out in the description below. We'll link to a playlist we made. So this is usually the point of the podcast where we talk about gear, and we'll talk about it a little bit. But George was not like an expansive gearhead, let's say.
Yeah.
He has his signature Ibanez guitar, which was introduced in 1977, and it was the first signature model from Ibanez.
That's pretty wild.
That's incredible. That's wild.
And it's still in production. And that's amazing.
Still in production, and they've made a bunch of different variations of it over the years and different price points. I think even now they make like a $700 version.
How come you don't have one?
Import version.
I feel like you should have one.
I have, I'm a Joe Pass signature model. That's my jazz box. But I did review the GB300 a number of maybe 10, 12 years ago. And it was good. It was a high-end one. It was one of the $5,000-ish models. Incredible guitar. And then he has a two signature Fender amps. He has a Hot Rod Deluxe and a Twin. And I would say most of the time, if you go see him live, he's just plugging guitar, cable, amp.
Yep.
Let's go. You know, doesn't mess with effects too much at all.
Do you know, like, okay, going back to like, Give Me the Night or something. Like, what was he using for an amp back then?
We should put the link to the Corey Wong podcast in the show notes as well, because in that one, he talks about specifically Breezin. He played a polytone amp for a long. He even mentioned the microphone he used on the cabinet, which was an Electro Voice microphone. And he tells the whole story about how that came about. But I think it was just a polytone. I mean, you know, swap out Fender for polytone and all that. And I did read that even like on the early Jack McDuff stuff, he was playing a Les Paul.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
So, but I think once it hit kind of in the mid to late 70s and he got that Ibanez, it was.
It's been Ibanez since, yeah.
Ibanez ever since.
Why not? He's got his name on the guitar.
Fake award time, buddy.
Oh, man. It's like best smooth jazz. Because that's my period. That's my period that I like George Benson. So smoothest grooves. No, smoothest lines.
All right. Most responsible use of smooth jazz ever is how I would put it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like
he
that.
Used his powers for good. You know, used his powers for good. And, I mean, he's just one of the absolute greatest of all time.
And like all we should time. Also say, like, you know, a significant thing that we're leaving out of there is like George Benson, like virtuosic jazz guitar player turned total pop superstar.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Like I mean, we weren't alive at the time, but he probably was like one of the biggest pop artists in the world at one point.
Yeah.
I mean, and he could rip on, you know, any jazz standard you could throw at him.
I mean, okay, Give Me the Night came out in 1980. I was not born yet in 1980.
Yeah.
But my like, the place that song takes me to is, like, a skating rink when I was, like, 7 years old or something. Like, they were still playing. That was 10 years after Give Me the Night came out. That's, like, they were still playing it. Like, that was a huge hit. And, like, how many, he had a lot of hits. Crazy.
Had a lot of hits. Crazy. A lot of hits. All right. Well, we did it. We got through George Benson.
Here we are.
All right. So Let us know what you think. We have a bunch of links in the show notes. You can hit us up at 100Guitarists, 100Guitarists, at premierguitar.com. You can text or voicemail. Leave a voicemail for us at 319-423-9734.
Check out our social media to see who we're covering next.
Who are we talking about next? Next week is going to be the Rolling Stones.